All right, I'm in the live stream here, Tuesday, September 6, 2022. All right, Forest Value, hello.
Howdy, Ab.
I moved to the live stream. I didn't realize what you're talking about, but yeah, the green room is limited to three. So, yeah, I moved over here, but they didn't move with me.
Maybe they're shy.
Well, they might have been talking about something that they think is unworthy or confidential. So that's okay. I get you. I get it.
Hey, I want to compliment you on you the recent Mike Stone and the one previous to that. I haven't listened to all of them. You had I think it was a Brazilian lady or some people that it was Tiago that has the died suddenly.
Died suddenly, yes, yeah. Yes. Thank you very much. I take compliments, I take them very humbly. Thank you.
Yeah, those were good shows. Very informative. I haven't really dug too deeply into the died suddenly idea. I have heard, I know you have some personal experiences with people, and I have a few friends that have had friends of theirs that have had issues. It's interesting because I know, I guess I'm probably one, or I mean, like, you know, my immediate circle, and there's a handful of people that are holdouts, but almost every single person I know has subjected themselves to this thing, and I don't know anybody that's had any serious problems, so it's kind of a little tricky to get a true picture on what the depth of the problem or the breadth of it actually is, whether everything we're being told about the numbers is true. What do you think about that?
Well, I heard some normies on the radio today who I listened to. They say they don't know anyone that got really bad sick with COVID, of course, because it's just a cold. And most people just get a cold. And they don't know anyone that died. So they don't buy into any of it. They say, why is it just anti-vaxxers that are dying? Which isn't true, but that's what their impression is. So they claim they don't know anyone. They don't know a lot of people, though, on this radio show, but they don't know anyone, but that's...
Well, sorry. I was going to say that from what I see in this sort of, I don't know if alternative is the right word, off the beaten path type circle, Steve Kirsch seems to be one of the biggest promoters of the massive numbers. Who's always breaking down the numbers of all the people with the problems and whatnot. And I don't find him to be very credible, you know.
Well, the problem is that if... why are there 200,000 people joining the Died Suddenly group? Are they all just ghouls and like to hear sad stories? Because
no,
I don't really...
No,
that's,
I don't... I'm not saying that at all. That's kind of unrelated, but I'm just saying I'm very suspicious of Steve Kirsch.
Steve Kirsch. Yeah, for sure. Omar hates the guy on Dark Side Papers. Are you on Dark Side Papers?
No.
On his Telegram?
Somebody posted, you have a link to it in the forum, I think, in Fakeologist forums, maybe.
Omar... Great guy. He was on my show a long time ago. I can't get him back on the show. He's not interested. But he has done some amazing work on all the actors in this PSYOP. And I don't think he trusts one of them, including Steve. He hates Steve. Steve is the clown.
Steve seems to be one of these people that, like, ordinarily we might think would be sort of on our side by exposing the massive numbers of injuries and deaths that are recurring due to this. But due to his whatever you want to call it, associations, mainly associations and background. He seems to be quite a suspicious character, and also his love of and promotion of viruses in general, I find to be suspect. And Mike Stone has a good article breaking that down.
Yeah, well, yeah, Steve can be quite hostile, and he's pretty nasty to Christine Massey, who is a pretty soft-spoken, I think, honest person. He sort of goes after her. He's quite aggressive. I like Steve at the beginning, but the way he's behaving lately seems confrontationally. That doesn't seem to be trying to help things.
It does seem to me, I mean, I think it's odd that he only seems interested in shutting down the foundation of viruses itself. Like, I think that's a very worthwhile question to ask. Like, well, what are they really saying about viruses? How do they know what these do, and how do they come to these conclusions? And you go look at all the information, and it's like, well, wait a minute, this stuff really doesn't add up and doesn't make sense. But it doesn't seem like he has any patience for that debate whatsoever.
Well, yeah, I've liked a lot of his work. I like a lot of Steve's stuff, believe me.
Oh, yeah, but like I'm not, I said, quite... it does seem absolutely like the stuff we would like. So,
yeah, you know, yeah.
And it makes me wonder about it. Like, well, what's his real function here?
That's true. I like poor Nima, too. But, man, it's taken her apart pretty good. I liked a lot of the things she said, but I guess even though she offered everyone to check her credentials, and they did. She got all janky about it, so that makes her look kind of stupid. So obviously that's why I had Mike Stone, because he was putting in all the time and effort where I don't really care to do so. So I'm okay with his conclusion. I still left her video up because she says a lot of good stuff, and I think there's enough good stuff in there just to leave the video up, even if she's sort of a fraud. Or charlatan, as they say, but they're... That's why I leave Steve's stuff up, because he's saying a lot of good stuff, too. There's not one person you're ever going to agree everything on, and we know it's a psyop, so it's okay for us to pick and choose the good bits of what we want to leave off.
That would make me question, so like these people for poor Nima, which... I feel like there's something in that name, but we'll leave that for
now. Yeah. Maybe. I'm not an Indian, so I don't know.
I always kind of ask the question, are these people that are just maybe, you know, misdirected and acting with good intentions, but they're just, for whatever reason, on the wrong path? Or are they actually there as a part of the psyop, being instructed to, you know...
That's right. Because if she really is of the virology mindset, if she really was educated that way, even if she's a rebel, pretty hard to get that out of your head, isn't it? If you were brought up, trained in virology and all these lies, you're not going to just drop everything and just say this is all BS if that's what you were indoctrinated into. Like, if you pull someone out of a cult, they're not going to just denounce the dear leader from the cult, say he's evil. Because obviously they had to believe it at one point to get in the cult. So to expect someone just to do a 180 on the cult is completely ridiculous. It's not going to happen, especially if they were in the cult for a long time.
Well, and the problem, I mean, we're talking about cult, and you kind of think of maybe Charles Manson or David Koresh or whatever, Jonestown.
Well, after the break, Farce Value, ecologist.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
You are listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com. Exposing media fakery, one psyop at a time.
Oh, man, that's when you had a good mic. Remember those days?
Well, I'm on my, I'm mobile on my headset. I still have the mic, but I just can't sit still.
I'm joking. I'm joking. It's okay. It's okay.
Unfortunately, I don't hear the other side of my headset, and I'm sad to hear that it's there's such a difference. But
no, you're good. You're good. I'm on my bad headset as well. I don't sound any good either. That's why we call this the audio chat. It's okay. As long as you can make out what we're saying.
Maybe next Saturday when I join, I'll sit in front of my good mic and give some good audio.
That'll be fine. That'll be great.
But what I was saying about these cults, as opposed to, say, Jonestown or you know, David Koresh, whatever, this medical cult, if we want to call it that, is, what, a multi-trillion-dollar industry? That this virus narrative is foundational to massive profits and government control. I mean, there's so much wrapped up in this thing. The word cult it doesn't quite do it the reach and power of this thing justice.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the only reason this is working now is the entire banking system is behind it. Before, it was not behind it. They were just doing test runs. But now the money is tied to this. And the Great Reset is the reason why we're still doing this, is because they want to reset the money. And that's a tall order. And
it's interesting you went there. I read Lou Rockwell pretty regularly.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about him.
You know, that's Austrian school economics, so there's a lot of economic stuff posted. And, of course, it's very anti-state because, you know, from the Austrian school, that the state can only do damage to a free market. It can't really aid and abet it. And so there's an author, Tom Luongo, that was interviewed on the Tom Woods podcast, which I listen to from time to time.
Yeah, me too.
And he made the point that if the world does adopt this central bank digital currency, then that is going to end commercial banks. Bank of America, maybe even...
Say that again? Say that again? I missed that. I was reading something. Say that again? What are they doing?
He was making the point
that
if the world... adopts, I think the Great Reset plan seems to be that they want to issue a CBDC in every country, right?
That's right.
Every country will have its own. Well, if they do that and every country has its currency issued by the central bank alone, it's going to make commercial banks irrelevant. It'll be the end of commercial banks.
Banks are going to be gone. That's part of the plan. All banks will be gone. Because they only lend money to the things that fit the 17 SDGs.
What do people like Jamie Dimon and people who were presidents of Bank of America and Goldman Sachs and all these things think about that? Are they just jumping up and down and saying, this is great, yeah, sure, end my multi-trillion-dollar enterprise.
They might be given divisions of the central bank, don't you think?
Well, he seems to not think so, because he's seeing moves in, you know, bond markets and stuff, you know, minute moves in the European, in the euro with the European central banks and whatnot, to give him a suspicion that there may be a rift between possibly even the Fed and the European central bankers, or the old school OG European banking families, and that some of these people might not be ready to give up their positions of power. And I mean, think about it. If you're, and I'm playing devil's advocate here.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. They can't all be in unison. There's a lot. There's too much at stake.
It would be the equivalent of, say, you have your own company, you're your own CEO, and you have a multi-million-dollar company, and maybe you have it dialed to the point where you come in a couple of hours every day, and you look and see your managers are doing the right thing. You spend time at the golf course, and then the government comes in and says, "Hey, we got this great offer for you. We'll give you this job as a bureaucrat and take your business, and you'll answer to the director and the lieutenant or whatever." And I mean, I don't think that's going to be really that attractive to a lot of these people.
Yeah, I don't know how they're handling all the mega banks, if they're going to wipe them out. It's a great question. I don't know, but that is the plan. That is the plan. The banks are going to be gone. All the regional banks, all the banks will be wiped out, because the only way you can make this work and enforce it is you got to control everything.
And I guess the way our banking system is organized now is, I think, the better part of the currency that's in circulation comes through the fractional reserve commercial bank situation, right?
Yeah.
When they only have to keep 10% of their deposits in ratio to what they can lend, so 90% of the money that's in circulation is coming from commercial banks. So, yeah, if they want to control everything, that part of the equation has to go away. So that's going to be interesting. But I guess for us, the man on the street, it's like the clash of the titans, right? They may be having their battles at the top, and maybe we could hope that whoever comes out.
It'll be very interesting. It's very exciting times.
Well, I guess exciting.
If you don't mind uncertainty.
Well, I just, it's just trying to figure out what you can do to protect yourself from whatever's coming.
Not much.
And it doesn't seem like there's a lot. But at the same time, it's interesting, because for the most part, I interact with almost no one that has
me neither.
Any knowledge of the stuff that we talk about. Like, zero. People have never heard of the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab. Even now, people don't know who that is.
Even 2.5 years later.
I mean,
In the first year, I told my sister Bill Gates and Charles Schwab was the broker. She didn't know what I was talking about. She said, "What are you talking about? Bill Gates?" I said, "Yeah, get to know him. Get to know him. Gonna be in your life."
It's funny. Because,
and by the way, I hate Bill Gates. I just upgraded to Windows 10. And I lost my printer scanner. It does not work with Windows 10. And none of my computers can see each other. And I have wasted 2 hours trying to get my computers to see each other. They can no longer see each other on the same wired network. So I hate Windows. I hate Bill Gates and everything he stands for, because 30 years later, his software is still absolute garbage. So there's my rant.
You know, 7 was a very stable platform. I had no issues with 7.
I upgraded from 7. I don't know. I just did it because there was something that said it worked better in Windows 10. I don't know what it was. But guess what? I'm just having a hell of a time. And this happens every time I upgrade Windows. You should just be able to plug in the machines. They should see they're on the same network. They should just connect. Nope.
Yeah, and that is an interesting thing, because what happens is that the third-party manufacturers quit writing drivers for the old systems or whatever, or they won't write a driver for an old piece of hardware for the new operating system. And it's like, you would think that the designers of Windows 10 would have this sort of backwards compatibility built into it, so that all the old drivers would still work. Like, why is it that when you issue a new operating system, that old hardware has to become obsolete? It makes no sense. I don't know that much about writing an operating system, but I don't know why it would have to be written in such a way that it would make your legacy hardware obsolete.
But it wouldn't be much for someone to write a driver to make my scanner work. My scanner's at least 10 years old, and it works fine. I don't want to buy a new printer or scanner, but this happens every time. That's why I used to upgrade right away, but now I try not to upgrade ever. Because I always like the latest and greatest. But speaking of oligopolies, and this is another rant against Windows and Microsoft, and I'm telling everyone, including on the broadcast, to get their own email server. And then one of my listeners sent me a thread by a guy who says he's giving up on his own email server now because the oligopolies are really in good control of email now, Gmail, Hotmail, and they're bouncing his emails all over the place. In other words, he can't get through their wall from the outside because of the way they control and have all kinds of rules, and it's really a problem.
So if you have your own email server, it won't be recognized by Gmail or whatever, and they'll just reject it?
They could easily reject your email and send it into a black hole. For instance, if you look at an email server like a house, you won't even get in the front door with your email. You'll bounce off the front door, and the person in the house won't even know you tried to get in. So you don't even get to the spam phase. They just block you. And to me, it's just of course, it's all in the name of safety and spam, but corporate. It's just corporatism. They say, oh, we're protecting our users from spam.
They told us years ago that they were scanning our email contents for advertisers. I mean, that, and people. I accept it too. I mean, I use Gmail. I hate to say it, but
I don't use Gmail. I have a Gmail account because you have to get into Google products like YouTube, which I am not really using anymore for my show. I'm pretty much just not going to waste my time. If you want to listen to my show live, you go to FakoTube, which I have updated thanks to people like you who donate. And now I've got it mirrored in 4-5 places. It's in Canada, East Coast U.S., West Coast U.S., Sydney, Australia, and Germany. Frankenstein, Germany. Great name for a city. So I'm mirrored all over the place. So it should be super fast, I hope. So that's happening, but I'm not on YouTube. But so I thought that was really interesting. The guy got a lot of feedback on his article about giving up on his own server. And a lot of people were giving him tips on don't give up. This is what you can do. I thought it was pretty useful. It's pretty interesting. I still say keep your own server. But if your email gets bounced.
Are you familiar with Apache? I think that's a server platform that people can use to set up an email server.
Yeah, I'm familiar. There's a lot of ways to set it up. And you can set it up rooting yourself through some approved services that you have to pay for. Not too much. I'm not doing that because they kind of pay the mafia tax to get through the Gmail, Hotmail firewall. I'm not doing that. I'm okay. If I get an email bounce back, then I will resend it using Proton Mail, or I do have a Gmail account, so I will resend it. But if someone wants to get regular emails and they're not getting my emails, then they're going to have to get off of the Gmail Hotmail plantation and get another email address somewhere else. So
I'll take this time to mention while we're talking about tech. You know, I do live event support for my profession. Yeah. And this past week, I mentioned it on one of our other chats. I did an event for it was a conference called NamesCon. Names Conference.
And yeah, it was you about told me that.
Names. Oh, did I tell you about that?
You can tell me again, because I forgot.
Well, yeah, I may, if I was on, yeah, if I don't want to repeat myself, people have heard it. But I just did hear some interesting talk about people that are looking outside of whatever ICANN and these, you know, corporate domain name resolution, you know, security outfits and people that administer domain names to come up with alternative, more free market and peer-to-peer, you know, distributed domain name solutions that don't have that centralized control that allows them to come in and shut people down at the domain name level or privacy and other thing issues that people have with that, you know, centralized control. There are some people out there trying to find workarounds for all this stuff in the tech arena. And they're similar in a lot of ways to the crypto community. I just found that to be kind of encouraging to know that, you know, there are people out there working on it. They see it. They see what's coming, and they're trying to find ways around it, you know. And so,
well, thank God for human nature. They don't give up. And that's what I said to the guy. I said, don't give up. Just because they're winning, because so many people are okay to give up their email privacy, don't give up. There's lots of us out here that don't like it. And maybe we need to rewrite email protocols, because it is based on the 25-year-old, at least, SMTP protocol. Maybe it's time to upgrade the protocol so it's more robust. Maybe we need levels of email. For instance, he said if you had to pay, say, 1 cent to send an email, that could put the spammers out of business. And would you be willing to spend 1 cent to send an email, or even half a cent, to get some kind of guarantee that it's going to go through? I would.
Or they would probably have some sort of subscription thing, too. If you had a company sending hundreds of emails a month, you'd pay $10 a month or whatever for unlimited, or, you know, they'd have all different ways of pricing it.
Well, there already are companies that do that, because they say they guarantee your email is going to go through. I almost did that because I was having trouble with FakoTube emails. But my emails for FakoTube, they're not that important. If you get them, If you don't, it's okay. It's not costing me money, because they're just alerts. And I guess the alerts can look like spam, because they come frequently and they all look the same. But I'm not going to kill myself to make the emails go through. But it's just an awareness that's interesting, that if you were running a bunch of domains and you had all these roadblocks, it would be a pain to administer all this. If people said, oh, the domain you're managing for me, my emails aren't going through, they're bouncing, then you'd have to figure out how to get them through. And that's why he said, I'm just giving up and using Gmail and Hotmail for all my customers as the back end, which is wrong. Because then they read all your email and scan it for data and sell it. Now, some people are okay with that, but I'm not.
Well, and I guess the argument would be, from their perspective, you're getting a free email service with a lot of bells and whistles, and that's how you pay us.
Yeah, of course.
By letting us mine your data, you know.
Yeah, that is the trade-off. Yes.
The problem is that there's potentially a very sort of cozy relationship between a Google and any sort of government authorities, where they have your entire email history.
After the break, farce and fake.
LSD-33.
I'm Rachel.
Konoku.
I'm Original Simulant.
Robbie Parker.
This is Ohio Hand.
You're listening to Fakeologist Radio at Fakeologist.com.
Man, you again. I have to pay you. What's your take on Purnima Wah? Oh, I guess we already talked about that. Never mind. Sorry. My brain.
Is it just us two here?
I think so.
Okay.
I didn't look.
What else? But what I was saying, there's a potentially cozy relationship between, say, Google and any...
No doubt.
You know, Alphabet, that if they ever wanted to go after you for a particular thing, they would happily turn over all your data to some authority. And that's, you know, very, very uncool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that. Of course, if you don't have anything to hide, then why should you worry about your privacy?
That's true. And now that I think of it, maybe I should be using Google's server to send my notifications, because there really isn't anything in there for them to data mine except being on the count.
I said that in all, with a huge slash S sarcasm comment, because whether I have anything to hide or not, it's nobody's business. Be all up in my in my business.
Yeah, really, yeah.
I just I think Zuckerberg was quoted years ago as saying that the expectation of privacy is sort of dead in the internet age, right? That it's a thing of the past and people should no longer expect that. Get with the program, you old farts. Privacy's dead. What are you thinking? It's a new world, I guess, and a new paradigm that we're looking at. And I was talking earlier today about the authoritarian personality disorder. Are you familiar with, not disorder, they want to describe it as a disorder, but just the authoritarian personality? It's a Frankfurt school, Theodore Adorno and Herbert Marcuse. I haven't looked into it too much, but the way I heard it described, I think it has to do with the patriarchy, and if you're in a nuclear family with some powerful sort of authority father figure in a traditional household, you know, traditional male-female roles, whatever, that you're in this subject to this authoritarian personality where they want to pathologize.
Yeah, that sounds like me.
And what they want to do is pathologize you and your family situation as being
make it a disorder.
Yes, everything that we would consider traditional and normal and natural and family and community and whatever our standard for just living what we might describe as a normal life, they want to pathologize it and call it a disorder. So now you have
I need medication.
Yes.
To get that out of me. Is that going to go in the DSM-6? What are we up to? DSM-5, 6, 7, 8?
Yeah, I think, psychiatry is probably in the same realm as virology in terms of I think there's pretty strong evidence that that's been used in the past for pretty questionable purposes. You're right. It is I guess it could be an exciting time to be around, but it's just, I'm just annoyed by it. Although I have to say, when it comes
your
to
your gas bill,
what gas bill?
See, you're just annoyed by it, but imagine being in Britain where your gas bill goes up 4 times. You have to close your business.
Well, yeah,
that would be more than annoying.
I do have the lovely young lady that was our producer at this last event, was kind of a room manager and, you know, introducing us to the presenters and whatnot, was from Germany. The team was from Germany. So she's mid-20s, maybe 30. And so I had a little bit of an opportunity to talk to her. I said, well, we're hearing a lot of things about how, you know, things that are going on in Germany. People are Googling where to find firewood and stuff. And the one thing she said she had a however many square meter flat. I don't remember because I couldn't translate square meters in my mind quickly enough. But anyway,
probably two or three.
Her gas bill had gone up from 40 euros to 100 euros in the space of a month, I guess. Oh, no, 140. Almost four times.
We're hearing, four times. Four or five times,
So that's something I could confirm from somebody that lives there. And I'll have a – so I do have a correspondence set up with her. I can check in from time to time to validate some whatever we hear out of Epic Times or whoever, you know, publishes news that's somewhat counter to the narrative that they want us to hear. And see if it's happening. It's always it's one thing I enjoy about the fakeologist community is we get reports from Britain, Sweden, Australia, Canada. We can see how things are going on the ground.
We did have South America, but that guy wouldn't answer me. He went AWOL, that guy. I got to get another South American correspondent.
Oh, yeah. Guy is in Colombia, right?
Oh, yeah, Guy, yeah. He's a little difficult to track. He's living in a different world. That's for sure. No, I meant, I had Carl Permans. He was a pretty interesting guy from Germany. He lives in Uruguay. But he disappeared on me. So that sucks. He was interesting.
So I guess I haven't really been the whole Punima thing was completely new to me. I was totally unfamiliar.
Yeah, me too.
Until I listened to the show. But I think if that's a part of the PSYOP, that's a pretty high level of sophistication, I think, for compared to whatever everything else we see. The people that they're trying to reach with that sort of thing are probably more on the maybe academic level and medical. I don't know.
Well, it was the first lab technician we've ever heard that is just explaining what happens in labs for the last 50 years. I thought that was good. I think that is all true, what she said. And actually, I'm not as bothered by the fact that she may be faking her PhD. I don't think she's an actor. She speaks. She's too well versed on what we talk about. And so I'm not really that worried about it as much as everyone else is just dwelling on it. I'm also not as worried about proving that viruses don't exist. I don't think that is going to make any difference to the future of what happens. That's why I think we can stop petitioning governments with FOIAs to find out if they have any evidence of purified virus. They clearly don't. 200 and 300 and 400 FOIAs will make no difference. I think we've confirmed.
It's such a convoluted, I mean, it's even like now when, now I can't remember where I heard this report. It was No Agenda or somewhere that in Berkeley is requiring maybe.
You heard it on No Agenda. You need the flu shot.
Now you still see people wearing masks, even though the CDC has rolled back their recommendations. And for the first time in a while, I listened to The Last American Vagabond, Ryan Christian. And he spends a couple of hours, three or four times a week, just comparing what the media says about the CDC to the actual reports coming out of the CDC. And they're 180 degrees apart. So the media has free rein to completely misrepresent official data coming out. Now, of course, the CDC never goes and corrects them, and you would think they'd have PR people that would be concerned about having their message translated accurately, but they don't. And he points it out almost every single show. He plays a media clip reporting on some CDC protocol or data or finding, and then he just goes to the CDC website and pulls up the report and compares what the media said to what the CDC says. And most of the time, they're like 180 degrees opposite. So there's this weird sort of dichotomy between, and maybe it's plausible deniability or something, where the CDC can always come back and say, well, no, we published this report.
It's just mass confusion. It's all on purpose. If you can't convince, confuse. I really put it down to that. At this point in the game, they know CDC has lost their believability. They know everyone is just spinning if they're listening or ignoring if they're not, and they're probably way better off. Like, even in Canada, we have one university here, University of Western Ontario, that's fully funded by Big Pharma. They have so much Big Pharma money, they don't know what to do with it. And they said you cannot even walk onto campus if you're not fully injected. Three. They want three shots. And today they just backed down and said, well, Health Canada has approved the new bivalent vaccine. Now, there's two lies in that statement. One, it's not a vaccine. And two, it's not approved. It's just under emergency use authorization. But you see how they've just shifted the language, because people are so tired of trying to make distinctions between the definitions. They don't have to do that anymore. They don't have to say any of that.
They have the same distinction between approved and emergency use authorization.
Everything is a mirror of the U.S. I think it's worldwide for the most part. They just mirror the U.S. You guys are leading this. This is a United States, U.K. PSYOP. So now the university's saying you don't have to prove you've got the injection until next January 23rd. So already they've allowed one semester to happen without the injection. Just moving the goalposts every day of the week.
It's like it's death by a thousand cuts, right? You know, they'll. I don't know. I guess
they're going to keep doing it.
You remember the Jordan Peterson talk about him saying something about not holding the line, basically, that they'll keep pushing, and if you're not consciously holding line at a particular place, they may let up for a minute, and then you think you're, you know, making progress, but then they'll come back with more, and eventually you're going to find yourself, you know, a mile back from the place you thought you were going to be holding the line. And that's kind of what seems to be going on. It's so hard for me to understand how, in the face of all the admitted failures of the vaccine, even by their own narrative, if you believe all of it, the viruses, and it's an abject failure. And I have to ask, how can they keep pushing this thing in the face of the obvious admitted evidence that it doesn't work at all? And it just doesn't seem to slow them down, not for a minute.
Because they know they have the guns and they have the authority, and they know people aren't pushing back in any meaningful way. So you're just going to keep pushing, keep lying. Nobody's calling them into account, calling their bluff. And some people are ignoring it, but this is for young people anyway.
Oh, yeah. There's that.
They're the targets. Young people, universities, all the way down to JK, junior kindergarten.
And that's where you would have a lot more insight into what's going on because you have children. I have none. I don't know. I have very little contact with people that are beyond 10 or maybe 15 years younger than what I am, and which is still fully past adulthood, middle age, whatever. But you have fairly young children, and are they giving you any insight as to whether there may be some hope coming out of that demographic in any way?
Well, I had a candidate for city council come talk to me at my door, and I engaged him for 2.5 hours. Can you imagine talking to me face to face for 2.5 hours? And he wasn't trying to leave. He was listening.
I'm impressed he had the time. That's a lot of time for one of those people to spend. Was he campaigning? Was he dealer?
Yes. He was canvassing, and he wanted to – his goal, a very impressive young man, totally awake. I asked what his stand on the quack scene is, he told me. I'm not going to reveal his name because he wants a future in politics, but suffice it to say he had information on how to purchase a certificate that's widely known in his age group, and I won't say whether he did or not. He said there is a big awareness in his cohort in the early 20s. He's a young guy. So they're aware of what's going on. He says he knocks on doors. He said the immigrant families or the non-white families that he talks to, they're way more awake. He said the old whiteys in my neighborhood are completely, completely indoctrinated. Some of them won't even come to the door. They won't even send their young adults to the door. They're just afraid. So he's getting an excellent.
The germs. Because of the germs.
Yeah. But he's wow. So totally awake. He gave me some. His parents are awake. His sisters are nurses, and they left on Terrible where I live, and they went to the States, and they're making mid six figures. So we've lost two great nurses to the U.S. thanks to our insane policies here, because our hospitals are enforcing the vaccine mandate and the doctors and nurses have just left. So now our hospitals are understaffed. They can't keep up because they don't have anyone that's qualified to work because they all quit or they're not allowed back in. And they just leave. They just go to the States and become traveling nurses and make 10 times the money. Who wouldn't? The United States probably sends a jet to pick them up.
She's making bank traveling nursing.
So
let me ask you this. Yeah. How popular how widely understood is that narrative that a lot of nurses have left, because they refuse the vaccine? Is this something that very many people know about?
I don't think so. I think it because the official narrative is not saying that. But if you have enough. Yeah, that's why it's so important to have a person-to-person network. So I'm glad I met the guy. I even gave him some do-re-mi for his campaign because he paid for it out of his own pocket. And I said, go. The guy says every day he gets a job offer because he's so young and he's going door-to-door like the old days. And he could win because the numbers that vote are around in my area are around 5,000 people. So if there's 8 candidates, he could win just with 5 votes. It's very possible. So
I think where I lived before in Florida, because my wife ran and she came within a few votes of winning, very close race for her first time. And a city of 5,000. I think it only takes about 3,000 votes to win out of 45,000 voters. The turnout is abysmal.
Well, I'm talking about our particular precinct. That's what he's trying to win. He's not trying to be mayor. So in our precinct, only about 5,000 people actually vote. after the break.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
So he could win if there's only 5,000 votes up for grabs. Obviously, there's about, I think there's more like 15 or 20 eligible voters, but only about a quarter are going to vote. He said last time it was only 18% voted. So he has a chance just based on that because the numbers are so low.
The point I was trying to make is that, out of 45,000 voters, they'd only get a turnout of about maybe 5,000 or 6,000. It's not very many. Very, very low.
Yeah.
Participation.
So my point is he gave me a lot of hope. He's totally awake. He knows what's going on. I was just impressed. And he said there are a lot of people that he meets at the door because he talks to people at the door. And he says, he doesn't mind. I said, man, you just wasted half your day talking to me. He said, no, he said this was a short talk. He hits a house like mine about once a day and he just stays to talk. And because it gives him energy, because he gets a lot of door slamming. So he likes, and he's getting a great read on what's going on because it's unfiltered. He's talking directly to people. So I thought that was really good. I was really energized and hopeful after talking to him. And even if he doesn't win, he's just sort of a force in our area. So he's going to keep running at whatever comes up. And he will win one day at some level. And I said, you're probably going to get beat down and grinded into the system. I hope you realize that. But, good on you for trying right now. And I'm glad you're awake, which is great. Totally awake. To the vaccine
On the one hand, I really like the idea of saying, well, as bankrupt and corrupt as the political system is, it's what we have, and maybe we can use it to steer things. But ultimately, I just think it's the system that was given to us by the people that run it, and they're always going to have whatever back door that they have to be able to control it, no matter what the votes are. Assuming they count them. I think on the local level, they probably do for local candidates. Once it becomes I have no confidence that the votes are counted.
Oh, well, just the system is... Doesn't matter what you watch on how they count the votes, it's pretty depressing that there's just no security at all. And it's wide open for fraud. And the last... election, of course, last presidential election was so obvious that if you don't notice it, then you're never going to notice or you're not going to care. And I think most people don't care. But even in our area, even in our city, he told me that because I said I can vote on the internet now. And he said, don't do that. Come in and vote. We use Dominion machines here at our local level. I said, why? If you're only counting 5,000 votes, a couple of people can count the votes by hand. Why do we need machines? It's such a joke. Why even let that into the city? Just do it by hand. There's no rush. We could wait a month to get the votes. Why do we need instant results? It's ridiculous.
And that's the thing. We're talking about all this voting and whatnot. A lot of people have been making, dissecting, if you want to call it that, having a lot of comments on this, recent Biden speech, where they're just the obvious gaslighting. I really don't get out in the world enough to have my finger on the pulse of whether a majority of people could believe the things that are being said by these people. I think it's possible, but I'll tell you what. I will share.
It's 30%. It's 30% believe it. That's all it is. 30%. That's all it means.
Well, they make it sound like it's 90. That's the problem.
No, it's not.
But
it's got to be around 30.
Miss Farce was shocking the other day, and I guess it was a clothing store, shoe store, and she had to call me right away. She said, I can't, I'm not going to suffer alone with this. There was a young girl, she said probably around 14 or 15, late teenager. She didn't shopping for, she said prom, but it's too early for prom. I don't know, dance or something. She's with her grandmother. And I guess they're looking at shoes. And it came down to talking about the left foot, the right foot, whatever. She said the. And now this standing there over here in this conversation.
I think you're cutting out.
Farsa,
I think you're cutting out here. I think it's you, not me.
Yeah, I'm getting into my car to drive, so hopefully it'll get better. Yeah. I'm probably handing off from Wi-Fi to cellular right now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, start your story over and if you're on your cell now.
Okay,
if you're on mobile data now.
My wife called me to share the story that she was a shoe store in the store.
Turn off your Wi-Fi. Turn off the Wi-Fi so it doesn't catch the Wi-Fi, so it just uses data.
Okay, yeah. Is that, am I clear now?
Yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, it turns out that the young teenage girl doesn't know her left from her right.
Oh, dear.
That's part of the story. And her grandmother, I guess, says there's some, like, a mnemonic device that kids might have had when they're, you know, you can hold your left hand out with your thumb and index finger pointed up, and it makes an L. Right. Then she said, the girl says, well, I don't know what an L is.
Uh-oh. Wow.
And so, now...
Is that like on the No Agenda show where the girl didn't know what a country was? You remember on the last show?
Yeah, similar. I've always been a little critical of those man on the street things because I figure they interview 100 people and they take the worst examples.
Yeah, they edit it.
This is pretty frightening. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, I mean, how can we not have some sort form of, and I'm not promoting this and I'm not a fan of it in any way, but like some basic universal basic income, because what is a person like this going to do in life? How can they go out and be employable not knowing their left from their right or knowing what an L is? I mean, we're
in trouble. You can't even drive a truck with that lack of knowledge.
Yeah, left, right. I mean, blinker. that's a pretty advanced age. These are things that I would imagine 3 and 4 year olds are learning. So
you would hope, but obviously she was playing video games when that was going on. Yeah, that's sad. That's a sad one.
Yeah, I'm obviously this is not representative of people at large, but just the fact that somebody can slip.
You hope not.
Yeah, it is, and I guess as far as, that's the thing too, that so, you know, if you look at John Taylor Gatto's stuff, and he describes what seems to be an intentional plan to remove critical thinking from public education. And
that's long gone.
History of that. Right, but then at a point, the institution becomes so corrupt and full of its own hype, or and the people that have matriculated through the system end up being the managers and teachers and whatnot, and it just keeps spiraling. Like there's no check.
Well, they're
on
in charge now. They're in
right.
charge now.
And so maybe at one point you have the whoever the Phoenicians go into Miles Mathis territory that says, well, we need to drop the IQ level by 30 points so these people don't get too wise, but we still want them at the factories and to be able to do the books or whatever. But then after 100 years of this, they're not there to say, well, wait a minute, we've reached 30 points. We have to turn it around. Because now the system's just feeding on itself. And there's nothing to stop it from just spiraling down until it, you know, we're beyond idiocracy. And, you know, maybe this is an example of what we have to look forward to.
It is. Yeah, it already is spiraling down now. Yeah, I just posted Miles Mathis's latest piece there on what needs to be done. But yeah, I think
the military was in the terminal.
You got it.
Is that right?
You got it. Yeah, you got it. That's not going to happen because the military is all fractured too. Every group is fractured along the COVIDian cult fissure. You can't tell where people stand in the COVIDian. Are they in the COVIDian cult or not? There's no really great, easy way to identify people. Oh, the other thing this guy told me, number one, I want to say one more thing. Because I said, if you're running for council, do you understand, have you ever heard of Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, SDG, Sustainable Development Goals? Like even in our own city, they have a department called Sustainable. Do you know where that comes from? He'd never heard of it. I said, have you ever heard of C40 cities? Nope, never heard of that. I just learned about C40 cities from the food guy who was on Higher Side Chats. That was fascinating. Toronto is a C40 city. Austin is a C40 city. And the mayors are going to be implementing Agenda 21 through the city, through anything they have control over, including food and clothing and regulating who can sell what. Really fascinating. Have you ever heard of a C40 city?
I heard you mention it on one of those calls. I think you said it's up to like 100 now or something, right?
Well, you do pay attention. You do pay attention. That's great. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. But the point is, he's never heard of it. And I guess that's not surprising. They don't really promote the thing. I said the Agenda 21 is from the 90s. That's when they came up with the plan for the 21st century. Now it's being implemented. And it has been for a while. Because he said he was opposed to these tall condos they want to put in my city. They want to put 75 tall condos in an area where there's just a few plazas. And I said, do you know where that's coming from? I said, you really need to understand where this is coming from because you're not going to be able to stop it unless you explain to people what it's about. It's not a random thing. And once the first tall condo goes up, it's going to be very difficult to stop the next one right beside it. It's going to be a snowball effect. So I said, as long as you understand what the plan is, and if everyone is for it, giving up your car, giving up meat, giving up clothing, giving up travel, if everyone's okay with that, and it's
for this. You know, the vast majority of people are not for this, and that is the thing that they still need is they need a level of buy-in to put these things in place. That just has to be there,
or they're just going to force it. And by the way, this guy was an economist, and you probably know this. He was telling me about the four pillars of capitalism, and one of them is private property. And I said, private properties is not part of Agenda 21. So you'll never be able to get ahead. And you probably know about that because you study economics. I can't remember what the four pillars of capitalism
I was having a conversation with a friend of mine in Florida earlier who was talking about he can't get his insurance renewed on his house, which is very important in Florida due to the hurricanes. And he said that the company that has been writing him is pulling out of Florida. They're just leaving. And So he has another, maybe the person who insures his car, it's a different agent. He was talking to him, and he said something about he needs a new roof, and he was looking at it. They're going to give him a 50-year warranty. He's like, if I'm around 20 more years, I'll be lucky. But anyway, at some point in the conversation, his insurance said something like, well, in 2030, nobody's going to own anything anyway. And
they said that
to be very, yeah. I would love to have been in the room. I'm like, where are you getting this information? Are you listening to Schwab, or is this coming from something else? Like that the insurance companies have this idea that, maybe BlackRock is going to own all the houses by 2030 or something. I don't know why he said it, but I just found it interesting that he did say it, and it was like not coming from this circle, from the WEF.
That is cool. Well, maybe the insurance company is signed up to SDGs, because all these corporations are signing up to SDGs, so they know they have to conform to them. Otherwise, they probably won't be able to get capital. And nobody really knows what's going on at the bottom. And I barely know what's happening, and I'm trying to keep up. So it's pretty fascinating. I'm trying to get this food guy on. If you can get a hold of this.
They're moving in the background, and they're far below the radar of what people see when their politicians campaign and they're electing their local senator or the president or whatever. And your vote for your elected representative has no bearing on SDG whatsoever. That's working in the background. It's like the operating system or something, and maybe your politician is like an app. But, you know, those things, they supersede votes and politics and all the sort of things. So I just don't really have a lot of hope in the political system providing any relief, because that's above the political system, I think.
Well, it's been captured. The whole political system, it's always been somewhat captured, but now we have this worldwide plan that's being implemented, and it's extremely well coordinated, and it has no competition. There is no other plan from anyone else. So that means in a game, if there's only one team that shows up, then the other team, if there is one, forfeits. That's what's happening.
I think
there's no competition.
Well, people think they're very misguided, I think, in their assumption that they can choose Coke or Pepsi, and somehow that's going to make a difference. And it's just not. I don't know how much more obvious it has to get that if you're interested in maintaining your personal property and keeping a level of freedom and all the things that are promised in these glorious documents, you have to walk away from the system, because it's not there to provide that for you by any stretch. And people have this, it's like Santa Claus hope that there's going to be presents under the tree or something. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take for people to come to this realization that the system is not there to help us.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you a question. I want to get, does it annoy you that No Agenda uses, both those guys use so many performatives in their show? And they criticize it in the politicians that they play on their show. They themselves use a million performatives. It must waste a whole hour of talking.
Give me an example, because I haven't really noticed, but I'm aware of them.
Yeah, they're the ones that told me what a performative was, because I never really heard of it. It's a form of rhetoric. They'll say, let me tell you something. Or I've got some clip I want to show you. It's an introduction. It's a wasteful sentence that you could do without. After the break, farce and fake.
Money, money, money. Must be funny in the rich man's fund.
Would you like to support Fakeologist.com and all the content we're creating? We operate on the value for value principle, where you pay whatever you can for whatever value you feel you've received. We accept donations in almost every form, from PayPal to Bitcoin. Please go to fakeologist.com/donate for your payment options. Thank you for your support.
And we're back, Forest Valley and Fakeologist. I got about 20 minutes left on this afternoon commute. I thank you for joining me, Forest Valley, from Austin, Texas, or somewhere around there. And, yeah, so they use a lot of performatives. So now you can start listening for them.
Yeah, I will pay attention to that. I do get frustrated with their endless vote the bums out solution. It's just, to me, that's also part of the PSYOP. That, you know, anything that
they don't really say
people...
That.
Huh? Oh, Adam's always going on about the Constitution. He just,
he'll say, vote them out. He'll say, vote her out. Now, I agree with him.
Same as Dvorak. Oh, I don't know why they keep voting for these people and, you know, this sort of thing. Like,
yeah, I
like
agree.
That's an actual solution that could work. You know, it's a, and
that's true.
Well, you told me you quit listening to the Quash a while back, but I still enjoy his
There's
take.
Something annoying about him. I can't pin it down. I just can't listen anymore.
Well, he's very repetitive. Is so high.
He's very repetitive, and it's really hard to do a solo show and be interesting day after day. I probably can't do it. That's why I really try and get guests so I don't have to talk as much. But and sometimes the guests are more interesting than me.
But he just always hammers the idea that the decentralization is the only answer.
We're running in the opposite direction. We're not even walking anymore. We're running towards centralization, worldwide centralization. So much for that idea.
Hey, how's it going?
I am the world.
That
word. Yeah, it does seem like that is the case. But then it's unless you're able to poll everybody in the world, you don't really know where people stand. And of course, the media always wants you to give the impression that everything that's on their wish list is inevitable. Right? That's the whole. And I think that's a big part of it is they capture the mind. And once you come to accept the idea that what they are planning is inevitable, then and that sort of really helps put it into motion and propel it forward, is the acceptance of the inevitability. So I'm very careful about putting energy into the idea that this is all baked in the cake, it's a done deal, it's going to happen. Because the longer I can hold out mentally that there is opportunity for resistance and workarounds and black market alternatives and whatever, I don't know if you remember.
Crypto.
One born free. He has that tagline from Philip K. Dick about evading and not being there and forging documents and hacking.
I should call the guy. He disappeared. Yeah. He was doing a newsletter for a long time. Another guy that just disappeared.
But, I think that is the solution to whatever. Because, at this point, we have absolutely no moral obligation to play by any set of rules. There's no reason at all that we should be listening or obeying anything they say other than the idea that you don't want to get tased and thrown into a cage. But I don't think most people look at the situation in that way. They think that there's some sort of social responsibility to play by this set of rules. But I think we shouldn't hold ourselves to a standard of playing by the rules when it's so obvious that they don't do that. So why should we be?
No, not anymore. Do you use FakoTube at all? I've been putting a lot of energy into it lately.
I just downloaded the Uncle B and Chris Sky. I convert them to MP3 so I can listen when I'm out.
Oh, do you? Oh, okay.
I browse from time to time, yeah.
Why do you convert them to MP3s? Why don't you just leave them as the MP4?
Well, I'm not going to watch them while I'm driving. So, and once I see the shot of Uncle V and Chris Guy, then I don't really need to see anymore.
So you do that so you're not distracted by the video.
I get it. We actually can't do the QR codes. We can only do it if it's labeled.
Okay. All right. I don't have the patience to sit in front of a screen for too very long.
No, but you could just play the MP4 with your screen off.
I guess I'm not sure. I use Smart Audiobook Player to play all my podcasts because it. Even if I turn the phone off, it's going to have the timestamp bookmark. So when I come back to it, it's in the same place that I left it.
I got it.
And maybe podcast apps do that same sort of thing. I just haven't updated my.
Yeah, they do. They do. But so you do go to FakoTube. Okay, that's what I wanted to know. I just want to know if you noticed it was any faster or more responsive.
Well, I tell you what. I have pretty good speed at my house. I do my downloads on a wired connection. But that video downloaded and converted in seconds, I think. It was super fast.
Oh, good.
And that may have something to do with your upgrade.
Yeah, I think so. You might have got it from New York City, wherever the server is over there.
It was fast.
Oh, that's
good. Was maybe the fastest any video that I've ever done that has ever downloaded. I had to look and make sure I just hadn't downloaded the JS file or something, which is usually like a few kilobytes, but
that is correct.
60 megabytes or something, and it was like, wow, that was super fast. So,
that's great. That's good to hear. That's great. Yeah. I'm doing, I pull a lot of videos from all over the place, and people like the videos, no doubt about it. They listen, they don't read. That's the way the world is.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, written, there's something about, articles, and especially where research is concerned, I feel like there's maybe some value in having a print reference to certain things. I almost would always probably prefer to read an article than I'm just not a fan of watching videos. It's not something I generally do. That's just me, though.
Especially talk show videos. I don't know why people, two ugly men with bad hair, have to do a Zoom call. Just do a podcast with a mic. Stop with the video.
Yeah, unless you have slides or some sort of graphical content that you actually need to have on the video, it's kind of a waste of bandwidth, really.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, you could have photographs of the people, and I don't think you're going to see that much in terms of facial cues and expressions and whatnot. You're going to add that much value to the conversation.
I try and somebody just did an interview with Clint Richardson, and he was on, I think it was a video call. So he was on his microphone hooked up to his video camera, and I could barely hear him. And I know Clint Richardson's done podcasts with good mics before.
but I just couldn't listen because it was so echoey. I just bailed. So you should know better. A podcaster like that. Stop using bad mics.
Years ago, when we were doing conferences and video over IP, sharing and stuff, there was a I don't know who provided it. I feel like this would be a really valuable thing. Maybe I should try to set one up. A loopback service where you could log in and then you could loop your audio and video signal back to yourself to do an actual test to see what your listeners were going to get on their end. I don't know if that exists now still, or but if it doesn't, I think it should, because I would do that before I joined any Zoom or call or anything, just so I know how it sounds on the listener's end, you know.
Would that be a website where you could do a loopback?
A website with a local platform that would just take the incoming signal and turn it around and send it back into the source.
A loopback testing service. That's a great idea.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, that's really good.
Always be able to tweak and make sure you won't overmodulate it or out of focus or whatever.
Yeah, just for the audio, that'd be good. Any closing comments before I take off for dinner?
No, I did. I'll mention, and this is just to you as an aside.
That's a performative right there. I will mention that's a performative. You did it.
Well, unconscious. There's nothing nefarious going on here. But
I told
Boogeyman that I would join the call on Saturday and offer my explanation as a video engineer and live production technician.
Oh, right.
My thoughts as to why it would make so much more sense to have everything pre-produced than to try to do it live on the day.
You're right.
You know, why go with 50% fakery when if you're caught out, you're going to be accused of airing fake stuff anyway? Why not just make it all fake so you have total control? That's my logic.
That is my logic too. And you are qualified to say that. And I forgot about that qualification of yours. So yes. I couldn't agree more. Makes way more sense. There is just no way you could guarantee success with inserting CGI into a live video. There's just almost no way it would work. It just almost guaranteed failure.
I'm not going to say it can't be done. The technology and possibility exist, but there's too many points of failure, and it would not be worth the risk to have something go wrong at a critical juncture when you could control the whole thing by just having it done in advance. Makes no sense.
Well, good one. Well, you have to come back. Come back. I'm glad you're back. I'm glad you just timed yourself out a bit. That's sometimes the wisest thing. Just withdraw, come right back.
Well, it told me some things about myself, which I needed to learn, and that was fine.
But even if Boogeyman
is curious about why you support his trashing of everything you stand for, but I don't support it.
I actually am glad that people like you are showing how he's wrong. And he doesn't think he's wrong, but it's valuable because there are people that think like him and they don't get airtime and they don't get refuted. And it's great that you're doing the work to refute it. I don't agree with him at all. I don't agree with anything he said, really, overall. But I don't mind the guy. It doesn't bother me. It's okay for him to be wrong.
Well,
it's
a little tedious in some ways because I feel like all this stuff has been covered in great detail in the past. And I guess the issue that I have is that he's sort of derogatory and sort of insulting to Clues Forum and Simon Shack. It's not that I, you know, Simon Shack is some kind of messiah to me or anything, and I don't necessarily know what to think about this whole Tycho stuff, but I still feel like there's it deserves a level of respect that I kind of take exception to is
He does promote September Clues. He said it's the gold standard. See, you got to give him credit for saying that. That's what he one thing Boogeyman says. So, I actually like the guy. He has almost two personalities, and he admits it. He gets off track and upset and starts yelling and screaming. But he's not a bad guy. I don't think he's a paid disruptor. I just think he's wrong. And it's okay to be wrong. As long as there's enough right people to straighten you out, I don't think we'll ever turn him around. But it's okay to contrast his theories to what I think are the right theories, which is what you say. And what I say, what September Clues and Simon says. So,
yeah. I mean,
I think it's worthwhile. He's generated tons of content.
At some point, you have to leave it into the hands of the viewer to make up their own minds and decide for themselves what they think makes the most sense. And,
it's been great content because it's got you talking more than ever, Frank going at it. Everyone has shown up. SMJ, everyone has shown up. Great.
Well,
otherwise you guys were quiet.
I recall that Clues Forum had very little tolerance for that type of personality on their site. They wanted to keep it more pure. They didn't want that.
Yeah. They have an archive. That's different.
Right.
We're trying to provide entertainment and get a discussion going. They just want an archive. And even their archive has some issues too. So it's not pure, but it's pretty good. But I'm going to bail because I got to go eat my dinner. And okay. But thank you so much for the chat. It was great chatting with you.
Same here, Ab. Thank you. Enjoy your dinner. Bon appetit. And we'll catch up to you on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, anytime. Just ping me if you want to chat.
Okay. Sounds great.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sure, bye.